We are now live, yes. Yes, we
That's
are
stunning.
live.
It wouldn't be a stream without someone saying, "Are we live?" right at the beginning of it, would it?
No, it wouldn't be. It wouldn't be. You have to do that. Yeah, I can see us now on my screen, so we are most definitely 200% definitely live. But yes, hello guys. Hello, welcome to our fifth episode actually of Starman and the Boomer. We're actually doing this, guys. I don't know, is it two or three episodes most series don't make it past?
Oh, it's yeah, two or three. Then that's
Yeah.
it. They just give up, and yeah, this is actually a thing, apparently.
They bother.
I'm waking up in the morning going, you know what? Let's think about how we're going to do the stream.
It's good. It's good. We've got a more of a less, I guess it does tie in with current events, but it's a good background stream we've got today, as you can probably see by the thumbnail and our background image here, that we're doing conspiracy theories, quote unquote, that turned out to be 100% verified true. There's a couple of ones here that there's still some debate about, like the media likes to debate, actual fact. But most of these are established to have happened. They are very, very, very much real. So yeah, that's I don't know, it's trick. It's something you can see our little tinfoil avatars there. It's something I've wanted to do for a little bit in terms of like an actual stream.
It's something I wanted to talk about forever because the use of the word conspiracy theory right off the bat is thrown out so often to discredit anything that seems a little, those things that seem a little weird and maybe there's something more to it than that, and someone comes up and goes, "Oh, well, actually, yeah, I know something about that. Apparently the CIA were actually sort of taking over the media or whatever." And people go, "Oh, good God, you must be mad. Have you been reading too many James Bond theories? That's a conspiracy theory." And so many times it proves to be true.
Well, who was it who said that the word was really used and popularized to discredit people from talking about things they shouldn't be talking about?
I don't know who said it, but it wouldn't surprise me if it is the term conspiracy theory is actually a CIA operation to
It wasn't
discredit.
CIA. I should really ha I actually meant to get this up because of Well, because of the fact that it's the whole conspiracy thing. But yeah, the term conspiracy theory was actually partly popularized to discredit like a lot of, especially in the 1950s and 60s, to discredit the reporting that was going on about, especially what people like the CIA were doing.
Yeah, it was JFK wasn't killed by a magic bullet shot from a book. Aren't you crazy? Of course it was. We caught the guy. Look, and oh, he was murdered before he could testify. Oh no, that's just a disgruntled, angry what? And the moment you question it, you're a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah, there's also a big there it is. A lot of people reference the CIA document like 1035 960, I think it is, where they talk about using the term to discredit in terms of information warfare. Yeah, it's the Warren Commission report is what a lot of people refer to when it comes to conspiracy theories. But well, that's a side thing. But we're not talking about the term itself here, even though the origins of the term itself and its popularization to discredit uncomfortable facts is kind of interesting. We'll be talking about quite a few things, because not to, I know you are the boomer, but not to put too fine a point in it, but you have been around longer than I have, Trig.
No, and I've lived these conspiracy theories for a long time. I was into this shit in the 80s, and so on. My GCSE history project, I think we're about the first or second year to actually do GCSEs. So there you go, that dates me nicely.
That does date you well.
I was studying the JFK assassination. Was my history project, and that got me into conspiracy theories right from that word go, because my history teacher would not accept the Warren Commission's findings on the JFK assassination. I wrote a project about it,
Yeah.
and
What? That was sorry. We mentioned. I mentioned the Warren Commission earlier when it came to the CIA attempting to discredit its findings.
Yeah.
But the Warren Commission was about the JFK assassination. Yes.
The JFK assassination and the accepting that it was indeed a lone gunman operating from the Texas Book Repository, shooting a bullet that could turn at, you know, not just right angles, but at one point it's like doing a 120 degree turn and it, through several different sort of. What's the word? Planes. It's literally doing a right turn and then going up. And that magic bullet? No, couldn't have happened. Had to be more than one shot.
Unfortunately, there never was any solid evidence. In terms of accepted solid evidence, at least.
Yeah.
There's a lot of inconsistencies. JFK is one of the things we may talk about in passing because he's so kind of influential in the conspiracy sphere. The JFK assassination really launched the entire modern, I guess, what we'd refer to as conspiracy movement of
yes.
Of alternate facts, let's say, of alternate takes of truth-seeking. But we'll also talk about him in other ways as well. Interestingly, tried to do a bunch of research because I've heard there's some very compelling stuff about Kennedy's elections being fixed by the mob and how mob interference in terms of the Kennedy vote is an accepted fact in certain places.
Yeah.
But a lot of the shit that I wanted to use has actually been memory hold. And unfortunately, a lot of it is like PDFs, links to PDFs and stuff that kind of died with my last hard drive.
I would have thought evidence of a Democrat president fixing an election would go missing right now.
Yes,
that seems
odd. A lot of it is due to the what do they call current political climate? Let's say. the current political climate. It is very sus. Let's get some susses in the chat, boys.
Yeah.
It is extremely sus.
No, so we're not going to cover JFK other than that. We will mention it again. But we're starting with a good old favourite, certainly of mine, MKUltra.
MKUltra is, I think, one of the best examples. Like I said, you being older than me, you remember when MKUltra was a supposedly wacky conspiracy.
It was stuff that maybe was the subject of an X-Files. In fact, I think it might have been the subject of an X-Files TV show. It was stuff that would be mentioned in sort of wacky TV shows, you know, about conspiracy theories. As you know, this is nonsense. Of course, the CIA aren't doing weird psychological experiments and drugging people and doing hypnosis to turn normal people into spies, killers, just general sort of operatives for the state without them even understanding that they are.
Say it with me now. Officially documented government mind control experiments by the CIA.
Yeah.
I mean,
This is who you're dealing with. This is America's intelligence service, and it's not just America's intelligence service that play this. This is what these guys are doing, and it is a mind control operation, and it has been going on for absolutely ages.
Well, I don't think it's still it's probably still ongoing in some forms. I mean, they do like their mind control, but it really ran from, I would say. When was the founding of the CIA really in the late 1940s and the 1950s all the way through into the 1970s? MKUltra ran, and it had some very high profile incidents of, you know, prisoners being experimented on, supposedly accredited academic studies being done as part of MKUltra, where even some of the academics themselves didn't know.
Oh yeah,
they'd kind of been positioned as an MKUltra study.
I mean,
and stuff had been kind of substituted. Here we go.
Anybody that knows, I could sort of throw out names, like Timothy Leary is one that comes to heart straight away, because I have a couple of his books, was a, you know, scientist working at a top university, you know, Ivy League universities he would go and lecture at, and he was being involved with the CIA to use LSD, variants of LSD, different sort of brands of it, and ways of cooking it up to test on students at parties and during actual sort of lectures, essentially. where they would hold various meetings in different places. I know one of them was in the underneath a church, whilst a ceremony was being carried out for the day.
Yes.
They sat underneath the church, high as kites on LSD, having a mad trip. And you know, their project was to basically study the effects and see whether or not religious ceremonies plus LSD would induce a different type of trip to, say, you know, watching horror films and playing screeching noises as music. They were playing with the mind and seeing what damage or changes, should I say, they could do to the mind with this stuff. And that was at the gentle end. At the horrifying end, you're talking about rooms that were full of spiked, essentially spiked wallpaper, you know, big uncomfortable places that would make you anxious just to be there, and put them on again LSD, playing different music and, you know, suggestions to people, and then, you know, essentially blanking their memory of it. But the suggestion was there.
It was there, and a lot of the reason they gave up on MK Ultra was not the ethical concerns. It was not the fact that they were at least partially exposed. A lot of it was because it just flatly didn't work. They couldn't find a way to reliably, at least chemically and psychologically, mind control somebody in the way that they were hoping to.
You know what? I don't agree. I would say that was the reason given. I would say so. Certainly, the classic one for getting people into MKUltra is the assassination of John Lennon. Is often linked to MKUltra. Was it? Nobody knows. If the case is that they can make assassins, or, you know, crazed gun nuts that go off and start killing people for random reasons and then get themselves killed, I would suggest that we've certainly seen an increase in that behavior of late. Whether or not you can link it to a mind control experiment that was perhaps closed down because of poor results, even though we've seen that exact result happen time and time again. And we know that that is an outcome from MKUltra, is you can turn somebody basically psychotic, and then they will kill themselves.
It's an interesting angle to say that they might have, if all of this is real and this is what we know, and we probably haven't seen all of it declassified. And you're right, there is a possibility that yes, there are things still hidden because this was hidden for so long. We were told that this was never real. The idea that the U.S. government was experimenting on people with LSD to attempt to mind control them was absurd. When would you say the turning point was, though? In terms of people thinking you were crazy for talking about MKUltra to MKUltra basically being accepted fact.
People still think you're crazy for talking about MK Ultra. Normies still do not accept. You can wave this PDF here, which is the joint hearing before the Select Committee on Intelligence, Subcommittee on Health and Scientific Research, and Committee on Human Resources in August 3rd, 1977, and go, here, this is a fucking document about their behavioral modification program. It is they named in there MK Ultra right on the top. Yeah, and they go, no. You've just looked up. It's amazing what people can create these days with the internet.
Oh dear, that's disappointing in my view. But I
It's
think it started to gain traction really in the age of the internet. Because I remember in the earlier days, I think it's even different from say how it was what I remember from like maybe like even 2005 to now. I think that when you talk to people about MKUltra, a lot of people, at least that I talked to who are younger, who've at least done some of the research, there's a larger percentage of them, I think, who are more aware of it now than they were, say, 10 or 15 years ago. Just because
yes.
of the information kind of, I can never say proliferation of the internet. Good Lord.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, certainly MK Ultra I can talk to under 20s, or sorry, under 30s rather, about it, and yeah, it's a given. But
Yeah.
my age group, the 40s and over, yeah, it's still, oh, it's Trig being a conspira boomer again, and he's been talking about this forever. You were telling me about this in the 90s. You know, are you gonna ever stop? And a couple, a couple come around, a couple go, huh, that thing you were talking about, it turns out some of it was true. Well, I suppose all myths are based on some degree of fact. It's always minimizing the you were being a nutcase and therefore I, you know, blanked it. They were they slightly admit it, but they won't really. And you then sat there going, well, okay, if I give you this piece and this piece and this piece and this piece, will you take the next logical step with me that maybe building 7 was iffy, or something like that? And then you know that they never want to take the logical steps. They always want to minimize as much as possible, and they want to go home and they want to watch Dancing with the Stars or whatever the shit is on TV. They don't want to dig up on the internet and scare themselves senseless that the world that they live in isn't what they think it is. And so conspiracy theories remain conspiracy theories along with these idiots. Here we go. I've got this nice...
quote-unquote conspiracy. If you want to scroll, there's a link actually here from NPR.
I was just about very, to... Yes. Here we go.
Very boring... It's not as trusted because NPR came out and said they were proud of the fact they never reported on the Hunter Biden files, on the emails, which is funny. Mm. Because they were basically flaunting that. But yeah. It's the CIA's secret quest for mind control. Torture, LSD, and a poisoner in chief. It's Sydney Gottlieb? I can never say it right. CIA, infamous CIA chemist, Sidney Gottlieb. And
I think that's just Gottlieb.
Gottlieb, that's it.
Gottlieb.
Gottlieb. Ah, yes. And my pronunciation is awful, as all of you guys know. But it's... MKUltra was a... I think it was allowed to happen so much, almost in the open, in terms of the agency's practices, because of the Cold War. A lot of what the CIA now does is black budget stuff. The CIA funds itself through its illegal activities. If you don't know what black budget means, it's if you know what Iran-Contra was. I don't think that was a scandal rather than a conspiracy theory.
Yeah, that was out in the open. I mean, the Oliver North, that was open. Openly what they were doing there. And yeah, that ended up in a massive trial and scandals galore, but back in the 60s, yeah, I mean, I mentioned Timothy Leary. He wasn't the only one. They had a number of... William Burroughs, the writer and poet, in inverted commas, although I do like some of his works, he was involved in all of it. They were all very involved in this sort of LSD revolution in the 60s. And everyone hears about, oh, LSD was everywhere in the 60s. What they don't realize is that LSD was everywhere in the 60s because the intelligence agencies were flooding this stuff out into the market via various people who were well entrenched with the agency. Well, happily sort of giving it to their friends and students and all sorts, and holding parties and generally making notes
of what happened
and also recruitment lists as well. These were recruitment parties. These were who would be interested in going and working for the agency and perhaps carrying this stuff further.
Well, the MKUltra is so good for kind of being the thin end of the conspiracy wedge for people to really, I don't know, say open their minds. I don't want to get my tinfoil out completely, but to really stop thinking in delineated terms of, oh, this is a conspiracy theory. Oh, the media says this is real, therefore it's real. The kind of the rigid thinking. And it's a good angle because it really shows from the get-go, the CIA and, you know, drugs and the war on drugs were linked. They were hand in glove. In terms of policy, CIA brings drug partly causes scandal, and government cracks down on drug. But the source of the drug was government.
How about this one? This wasn't. This is not enough. This NPR. We've got in CIA documentation, yeah, with regarding usage on tests of drugs like LSD and other drugs that could be used to control human behavior. This is. They're even openly admitting it in their open documents that they have this.
Yes. Yes, they are. They started off with psychedelics. I think in 40 years' time, from where we are now, I think we will be talking about, you know, how it's widely accepted that the CIA was very much involved in the cocaine and opioid crisis. Because we already know they're involved in the cocaine crisis with the Contra affair. But the opioid crisis in the 80s onwards, in terms of the inner cities and in terms of the war on drugs and societal control, that is organized and that is kind of initiated.
Well, you know what? You can read books like Mr. Nice, who talk about Harold Marx, the drug dealer in the 80s and early 90s, who was working for CIA, MI6, the IRA, and Afghani drug dealers to transport marijuana all over the world. And he'd got contacts in all manner of agencies because of where he went to school, which was Oxford. I think it was Oxford or Cambridge. Can't remember. I think it was Oxford. and he picked up lots of connections with intelligence agencies there, and they'd all encouraged him. And right in there, writing books like that, you have connections with the CIA being involved in shipping narcotics from the Middle East into America. We know that they were shipping cocaine in. So to say, oh, they might be in 10 years' time, we already know. Of course they are. The bits of information are out there to be put together. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And Howard Marx, by the way, anyone that's interested, Howard Marx was a Welsh guy from nowhere who, very, very intelligent, went to university, Oxford, I think it was, best university in the country, one of them in the best in the world, and that's where he got hooked up with the IRA, heavy drugs, and international drugs, you know, shipping. He was a good boy from nowhere and fell into bad times in amongst bad people, those people from Oxford and Cambridge, those people from the CIA and the MI6 and this, that, and the other. I'm not saying... But anyway, I digress.
This will link into something we can talk about later, because there's a few more things to tackle here on MK Ultra specifically.
Sure.
But the tap on the shoulder, as they call it, I'm sure you're aware of, in terms of Oxford and Cambridge and these elite universities and strata of society,
mm-hmm.
that the intelligence community tends to recruit from the younger end of the intellectual class in terms of, you know, people who are lifers. Not people who are assets, but people who are lifers, people who are insiders of the agency. Especially in MI5, MI6, some of the stuff about the, you know, it's a toffs club. It is. A lot of it is to do with, you will get a tap on the shoulder, they call it, at university, and you'll be asked to, you know, work for the civil service, let's say. That's another euphemism that's used.
Yes. Yes, come work for the civil service.
Yeah, yeah, it's something that we'll link into what we'll talk about later with Skull and Bones and the Bullingdon Club and some of the elite secret societies that openly exist that many members of world governments have belonged to, you know, and in many ways we can argue still belong to because of their practices. We talked about this in our previous streams. This is kind of why we wanted to do this, because it forms a good basis for a lot of the stuff we talk about that a lot of people consider quote-unquote tinfoil. Whereas there's an extremely good factual basis for pretty much all of it. MK Ultra being possibly the best example, because it has some of the most time between the events and today. As time goes on, it becomes less and less important to protect the lie. And so a truth is allowed to come out essentially when it's too late, though. There's not really a lot we can do about this. A lot of the people who could be prosecuted because of MK Ultra are dead or too old.
Yes. You know what? They want it to come out within their lifespan as well. They want to be able to sit there in their 70s and 80s and point at the documents and laugh that we got away with that. If you'd known about that 40 years ago, you'd have lynched us all, but now you do just have to suck it up and deal with it. That's part of it. It's part of the consent thing that a lot of... I've always felt that a lot of these types of groups of people believe that consent of the masses is actually important, but that silence is consent. All they need to do is tell people about it somewhere. Put it out somewhere. Make it available somewhere. And if no one hangs them from a tree, they've consented to it as far as they're concerned. But
it's like the prison stuff. It's why I talk about that stuff. Again, maybe we should have brought that in. That's a good modern example, but that probably requires its own stream. That's why I didn't want to bring it into this.
Prism, yeah, yeah.
I'd like to do an entire stream on Prism at some point and the Snowden documents.
Yeah.
That is another example that if you told someone in 2006 that the NSA was collecting their phone records and collecting the phone records of every single American and keeping them and using them to cross-reference who knew who and, you know, social links and societal links and groups and to build a map of the US population, its beliefs, its practices, and who physically talks to who over the phone network, and to match that with, you know, records from other agencies, use it as the pretext for investigations. You'd tell me I was a conspiracy theorist. You'd tell me I was mad.
And so people are starting to accept that just a little bit now with regards to the metadata and the meta files that Facebook may have on just about everybody because of the data that everybody else is sharing. And when it's explained to them like that, they go, oh, okay, I see what you mean. They already know people that exist that aren't even on Facebook. Multiply that by almost infinity. If you multiply that by all of the data, not just the Facebook data, but all electronic data, including phone records, yeah, that's what the government has with Prism. That's what the British government has with the Snoopers Charter in 2016. They know everything, and that includes being able to link what you spent on your credit card and when, and know your buying and spending patterns, and extrapolations from that.
Yes, before we get too far away from it, there's a couple of things I want to mention that I saw in the chat and a couple of donations as well.
Oh, yes.
Mogru in chat makes a very good point talking about both Operation Paperclip and Operation Surgeon, which were the British and American intelligence agencies' plans to bring high-skilled Nazi scientists into their missile and kind of Cold War programs.
Yes, both the true.
Glow-in-the-dark CIA Nazis is how he put it, but it's true. A lot of these agencies openly embraced a lot of the Nazi establishment who would be useful to them, especially if you look at the Saturn project, and the Saturn V rocket was essentially made possible by, well, it was fully made possible by Nazi scientists and their work on the V2 because they invented the high-pressure fuel pump.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So those are another two things. Like I said, there's such a long laundry list here that we're trying to break it down to some really, really core ones. Which is why we're focusing.
It's not just the Saturn V as well. It's not just rocketry. They got jet engine technology, although a lot of that was...
Van Braun, yes.
Yeah, a lot of that was also from England and America themselves and so on. But even down to... I know that Gestapo people, in the same way that the fucking Stasi, when the wall came down in 89, they did the same thing. The Stasi, they're really dirty, you know... Secret police, like the Gestapo before them in the Nazis, were immediately recruited by intelligence organizations.
Because they liked how efficient they were, yes.
They knew they knew the tricks, they knew the trade. They might
I like wheeling out von Braun and all that, and the Nazi recruitment efforts in both Europe and the US, because it's funny when they say, you know, in the 1940s, the American government used to punch Nazis. It's like, no, they didn't. They used to hire Nazis.
They used to hire Nazis, yeah.
But yeah, I'll read out a couple of donations here. Again, donation link in the chat. We get them through Streamlabs. It will pop up on stream with, unfortunately, the default Streamlabs notification. I'm trying to figure out a way to change that without paying for fucking Streamlabs, because Streamlabs is genuinely kind of awful. I'm looking for alternate avenues to it that don't involve that. But we have another donation here from HK9410, giving us an update on the fantasy gun that is his name. I posted a picture in the Discord that explains why the rifle won't be a bullpup. And that's a $5 donation there. Thank you for that. And another donation again from Jesus Fright Christ, who I saw in the chat, who made some good points there. Did a 20-year-old Trig fight in the Napoleonic Wars out alongside a 20-year-old Britisher?
Oh, it's too old for the Napoleonic Wars. Cricky.
I'm sorry if you guys did it in other currencies, but that is a $3.30 donation there. Probably a different currency that came through. Unfortunately, PayPal only shows the dollar amount through Streamlabs. But yes, thank you guys. Thank you for the donations, and do keep them coming. They help us, you know, remove the boomerness from this stream, and also buy us hot pockets. So even though they don't really have those over here.
We can get tendies.
UK equivalent?
Tendies? We can get tendies. Hot pockets.
Rustlers. Oh. They keep us in Rustlers.
Yeah.
Rustlers and Happy Shopper energy drinks. And Space Raiders. Oh. Mate, that used to be my lunch when I was in sixth form. I'd have a Rustlers, a packet of Space Raiders, and a fucking Happy Shopper energy drink.
You know what?
The baggy shop.
You know, I don't think to this day I've seen someone willingly buy a Rustlers.
The barbecue rib one's not that bad. The rest of them are awful.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've had one once and thought I was being attacked in some way.
A Rustler's a bit like a Ginster's. It's a desperation food.
Oh, you know what? People that think fucking Ginster's pasties are pasties. I just want to drag them down to Cornwall and force feed them an actual pasty. Oh,
sorry, we're digressing. We're going off on a convenience food tangent here, because we have been talking about MK Ultra for a good while now. Good lord. Okay.
Did half an hour.
Shall we move on to our second conspiracy theory of the day then, which leads in quite nicely with our. With my, I don't know, which one should we do next, Trig? Because there's good lead-ins to both of them.
Well, the thing is,
we've got.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it should be. We should go for Mockingbird.
We should go for Mockingbird because of the CIA connection. But a lot of what these conspiracy theories have in common, there's two things. There are covert government agencies and secret societies, and a lot of them brush on both. But the next one we're going to go into here is Operation Mockingbird.
Mm.
And I will actually give a quick primer here, because there's a lot. The CIA still puts out a lot of disinformation about Operation Mockingbird. And I've seen a lot of articles which try and discredit its scope. Operation Mockingbird is the name that is used as an umbrella term for a large amount of operations that applied to US journalists and the CIA. And Operation Mockingbird itself was a surveillance operation. It had a limited scope, but there were other operations that did not have a limited scope and were not surveillance, purely surveillance operations. And Operation Mockingbird is used as an umbrella term for all of them by people who want to talk about that. So whilst it's, I guess, technically incorrect in terms of operational names, in terms of what was going on and what we're saying here, it is correct. So if you see information that says that Operation Mockingbird isn't what people think it is, that is unironically CIA disinformation still.
Yeah, I mean, you can see Operation Mockingbird still in effect. Well, is Anderson Cooper a CNN presenter? Is all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Right.
He's one of the people who is... There's a lot of holdovers, a lot of older newsmen who were around during this era. There's a good chance they either encountered stories that were fabricated or put forward themselves by Operation Mockingbird, or that these people are genuinely CIA assets. Because, as we'll go into it here, Operation Mockingbird started off as a surveillance operation. A lot of it was reprisals. Sometimes the CIA will try and reframe itself as being heroic during the Cold War to try and stop the Soviets. This wasn't that. This was the CIA going after journalists who were publishing their documents and showing their abuses.
Oh, sorry.
What happened during...
Federal inconsistence scale just jumped in there by accident.
That's fine. We are very much at the top of the it's actually kind of shaking right now. I'm not sure the scale can take the amount of glowing that's happening.
Yep, it's right at shift out of park level with Operation Mockingbird. It was up there for MK Ultra, but Mockingbird, bear in mind, see the link here. CIA trying mind control stuff. CIA trying to control the media. There's a theme here. Just in case you hadn't noticed, with that particular agency and their friends.
Let's not forget about the CIA. The CIA is not supposed to operate on American soil.
No,
they are supposed to be the dirty war against an enemy. And everything we're seeing here, we are seeing two operations that very much did operate on American soil, MKUltra and Operation Mockingbird. These were operations against the American people with the twin aims of mind control and press control. And if anyone tells you that the CIA is your friend, I remember seeing stories from journalists about the poor CIA agents who had to deal with Trump, the poor CIA heroes who Trump mocked and made him get a milkshake. He made them getting milkshakes, which is hilarious. But yeah, anyone who is saying that the CIA is anything but an abhorrent organization is not your friend.
I mean, Mockingbird is even documented on Wikipedia in a relatively. It's a start. There's places to dig from there. The CIA. The CIA are not following their remit. And haven't been for a hell of a long time. And how it's being allowed to continue, well, it's not a mystery. It's fairly obvious. But it's freaking terrifying. They are the swamp. The very swamp that's... they're uncontrollable at this point. Their remit is to knock over and take over governments via... various things. They shouldn't be playing that game. They should be doing intelligence work, which is what the rest of the intelligence agencies around the world do. The CIA are an aggressive intelligence agency. They actively are involved not just in disinformation against propaganda. They're actively being propagandists in other countries on their own. And it's that their overreach is... it's just blatant overreach at this point, and they're not even the friend of the USA. I'm not actually sure who the CIA really are friends with, other than those who are friends with the CIA. That little group, they seem to operate for themselves.
A lot of the CIA's remit and a lot of what you see. Operation Mockingbird is a good jumping off point for this, but a lot of what you see of what the CIA's actions is not defending the US, but defending the CIA.
Mm.
The CIA is an organization that attempts to justify its own existence and justify, it's like an ever-perpetual machine. Information warfare is justified by covering up and hiding previous information warfare. And they are given the tools and the skill set, you're right, they are given the tools and skill set and remit to sway foreign elections. And then it's expected that this unaccountable organization that has its own black budgets, has its own rules, and has basically no code of ethics, it's expected that they won't turn that power inwards when there is a lot of evidence that they previously have. MKUltra and Operation Mockingbird being the highest profile of which.
Certainly that we know of, and that's obvious, but yeah, this is all documented, and let's actually get some of these documents up, because we're just looking at one little snippet here. I'm not going to actually go to the Wikipedia page, because it's a Wikipedia page. It's lots of text. A wall of text is not fun to look at. I'm sorry. But here we go. Here we've got muckrock.com. Not 10 out of 10 for...
They're pretty good in terms of reporting on the press, actually. I've read this, and this is pretty good. I also have, there's one here from Carl Bernstein as well, the award-winning Washington Post old-school reporter. Those are the two links that I wanted to use. One of which talking about, one is just the CIA and the media, and how they worked hand-in-glove with the Central Intelligence Agency. And he mentioned the Church Committee, which is another one of those committees that the CIA attempted to cover up.
Let's throw up the Bernstein one. There we go. In fact, let's see if we can't make that a little bit more...
The CIA had its own press pool, and the CIA had journalists who would put out stories and put out press wire stories that would deliberately counter the narrative, especially when it came to the CIA itself. Again, we see the pattern emerging here, where it's the CIA attempting to cover up for the CIA. It is a very self-serving organization. Yes, it's...
Yeah, essentially, what they did throughout Mockingbird was, and I know you said yes, it's over and done with, and it was just a brief period in the 60s. They have been. It was perhaps the start of their interference with the media. Perhaps it was the start. Perhaps it wasn't. Perhaps this was actually just a medium point that we got wind of, and somehow became not we became aware of it. But essentially, the CIA have been playing around with the media, bribing, bullying, threatening journalists. You know what works best? Bribing them. They bribe them. They give them lots of money. They give them lots of money and then promises of promotion. Not in the CIA, but because they've got other people highly connected in other organizations. And eventually you end up with CNN, which is... do the research for yourself, but the amount of their security analysts, people that fact check, etc., and even some of their presenters are either openly affiliated or ex-CIA, or at least have that gentle glow when you turn the lights out about them.
It's always funny. It's funny reading this that the Carl Bernstein thing goes into Joseph Alsep, who went to cover the election in the Philippines at the behest of the CIA at the time. He was one of America's top syndicated columnists. But in the body of the text here, it says that the use of journalists has declined since 1973, since a lot of these commissions and pushback happened. It's really funny that people in the current seem to say that this isn't going on or wasn't going on when they were around, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas it's always revealed that it was. I think the idea that the CIA, as its power has increased, especially post 9/11, especially post Patriot Act, as its power has increased, the idea that it wouldn't use the press in the way that it's so productively used it in the past is laughable. And again, that's why showing people that all of this is real is important, because it establishes pretext. It establishes, the fact that what has happened before can happen again and is probably happening now. That we know for a fact that 400 American journalists, some of the top journalists in America, at one time or another, either tacitly or explicitly, worked for the CIA as operatives, informants, or propagandists.
Here's the thing. At the time, what happened when someone said, are the CIA doing anything about this? Are they involved in the media? They would have said no. They would have said, no, this is a lie. You don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, which is what they're saying now. By bringing out this and going, okay, we own up. We did this for this, 1 or 2 years that we were doing it. And we learned that this was a bad thing to do. And we were terrible people and people were upset about it. So we've learned our lesson and we'll never do it again is total fucking bullshit. I'm fed up with this. It's like, oh, yes, we know that they lied to us because they lied to us then. We know that they're fucking liars. And oh, they've been caught out in it. They're fucking owned up to a tiny little bit, and oh yeah, of course they're not going to be doing it again. They got nothing out of that. Of course, controlling the media is going to gain nobody anything, because everybody knows that people are far too clever and bright to fall into bullshit and have their brains fucking melted by constant bullshit from the media. Of course they'll think for themselves. No, they won't. They will fucking follow like the goddamn sheep that they are, most of them. And we get fucking dragged along with them, unfortunately.
Yeah, Ehrman in the chat brings up another point I wanted to bring up as well, saying that, you never just work for the CIA once. Once you are an asset, you are an asset for life.
Oh, yeah. Generally. Oh, yeah, you can never get out.
Yeah. It's bribery or kind of pressure to do service for your country, which always becomes blackmail.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you are a journalist who is then revealed to have had worked for the CIA, no one will work with you again, especially if you're a foreign correspondent. Or if you do any work abroad, because that is the main stuff they admit to. They don't admit, or they are begrudging to admit about a lot of the stuff that they've done on American soil, because that's technically, treason. It's against their remit. But all the stuff abroad, they do admit to. And, it's not just the fact that they use these journalists to collect intelligence. It's the fact that they then own all of these journalists and all these publications, because they have dirt on them. And the dirt on them they have is that they worked for the CIA. And like I said, it's blackmail in of itself. It's kind of genius, because you don't need to go and you don't need to make up anything. You don't need to dig up into these people's personal lives, even though I imagine the CIA would have done if they wanted to use them as further assets. There's so much documented evidence wherever the CIA goes that they do that. But that just the very fact that they have worked as a CIA agent is discrediting enough to their public reputation that you can make them basically do anything to keep that from coming to light. You know, in the lifespan of their careers. Because a lot of this stuff only came to light outside of the lifespan of these people's careers. They'd already made the money. They'd already got past the point where being discredited didn't matter to them. And then it came out. So you have to think that anyone who was, you know, in the press pool at a certain point, who've worked at certain publications, yes, you really do have to consider if that person is owned by the CIA because of things like this, because of documented, well, you know, kind of well-covered, well-admitted to, accepted pieces of fact like this.
I mean, you say it should tarnish them forever, but there are a lot of security analysts working for some mainstream media organizations openly admit they're ex-CIA. And anyone that's ex-intelligence agency isn't ex-intelligence agency. They are, of course, going to speak to one of their handlers and say, I'm going on the show tonight. What do you want me to say? Should I leave out that thing that we did in that country where, you know, where the party afterwards with the three girls and the donkey? Yeah, we'll leave that out. Okay, cool. And even if it's just the leaving out the embarrassing thing that, which they shouldn't do, actually, they should go with that story. That story is probably the most interesting bit in it. They're always an asset. Of course they're always an asset. You know, their pension depends on it, and believe me, that pension's worth having.
Yes, that pension is very much worth having. In terms of the rest of the Operation Mockingbird stuff, I mentioned that the actual operation that, you know, this umbrella term is named after was a surveillance operation.
Yes.
On US soil, on US journalists. It is something that the CIA engages in very routinely. And it should not be left by the wayside that all these things happen. It's very, very similar to MKUltra in that part of Mockingbird really was to cover up MKUltra, was to try and stop MKUltra coming to light, because MKUltra was so widespread, so many people were involved, so many researchers, so much crazy shit happened. I mean, some of you guys have probably heard the story about the, I don't know if it was MKUltra umbrella or not, but the dolphin experiment. Where they fed the dolphin psychedelics kept it in a house, a house-shaped enclosure, like waist-high water, and tried to talk to it. It's quite a famous experiment, because the experiment carried on after the CIA and US government cut its funding, and it's a bad end. It's got a sad story. They tried to make a woman live with the dolphin as its like dolphin wife.
Didn't she fall in love? Didn't she fall in love with it and stuff as well?
Yes.
It's if you ever want to depress yourself, go read up that story, and you'll feel weirded out, grossed out, mildly terrified, and then sad. It's horrible, and yeah, your tax dollars went towards that.
It did.
To be honest, with the CIA, yes, they have the funding from that, but you know, at least some of it was paid for by cocaine.
I'm gonna say, yeah, if you've ever brought any kind of illicit drug, you probably in some way funded an intelligence agency. The government taxes you one way or another.
Yep, that taxation, it's always there. Christ. That's sad.
Oh dear. And yet we don't have representation there, but
no.
Anyway, shall we move on to our second kind of tranche of conspiracy types?
The second tranche.
Yes.
Phase two
of the USS conspiracy. Like I said, there's a lot of stuff we will talk about. In fact, before we move on, I'll read a couple more of these donations, because we had a couple more come in.
Right.
I've had a donation here for $3 from, is that James Merry? He's actually talking about something we won't mention. Are you guys going to talk about atrazine, the pesticide that causes fetal abnormalities, also causes chemical castration of wildlife, famously turning frogs female? Yes, we were going to talk about the fact that Alex Jones was right about the frogs being gay, but we'll come to that stuff later. But thanks for the $3 donation there. And a donation here from was that Keithness Barbarian for $6.70. Sometimes I do wish I could go back to sleep. Blissful Ignorance has a very large allure when you start digging. I've always been mistrustful of people with power, but never. But you never know how bad it is until you dig. yeah, and talk to people about it.
It is like literally digging to hell. As you start digging, there's shit all the way down, and eventually you fall into a pit of hell that you will never fucking get out of and forget, because once you know
if
it's
only
there,
you knew.
Once you know
if
it's
only
there,
you knew how bad things really are.
You can never forget what the people on the walls that supposedly protect society, A, do to protect society, and B, do to that society for apparently shits and giggles. Yeah.
Yeah, some of this feels like a bet. Some of this feels like a bet.
Yes.
Yeah, but since we've gone into this, well, we're kind of going from the government to the private sector in kind of like a sliding scale here.
Mm.
It's an interesting pathway because these are all linked. We talked about the tap on the shoulder, and a lot of the way the intelligence community actually recruits people, and a lot of the way that especially governments and the elites keep each other in line, is through the use of secret societies. Again, these exist out in the open. I don't know, Trig. Actually, shall we tackle the elephant in the room first? Shall we actually talk about what the Illuminati is? The realities of what it was and how the term is used as a catch-all now, really, for a lot of these secret societies.
Right. Okay, so... Yeah, we can, but what I'd like to... Do we cover that first and then... Because this is a subject that I can really fucking go on about. Because the Illuminati, it is a fact. What I'm going to give you now is a set of facts. These things exist. These people exist. Right. Adam Weishaupt was a German intellectual back in the 1700s. And in 1776, a year that some of you might find particularly interesting, he founded the Illuminated Lodge of Bavarian Seers. Now, as part of the iconography of that group, some information on him. Yeah. But as part of that group and the iconography, he used the eye in the pyramid and some words around it, etc., as part of the iconography. Something that has found its way onto the dollar bill, I might add. This is, you know, this is real stuff. Where is it? There we are. Good Lord. Sorry, having a boom moment once again. Many tabs open. And it's not loading. There we go.
Aha, you found it.
I found it. This page takes a while to load. but there you go. That eye in the pyramid and the scroll around it. Somewhat memorable. Some people might have seen that before, especially anybody that actually pays with paper money in America will recognize that. They also might notice that that particular image of Adam Weishaupt, an older version of him, is it is said to be the picture of George Washington that's on the dollar bill. Now, this guy had a number of people that were involved in this particular lodge, Masonic type lodge of Bavarian seers, and they all seem to sort of find themselves over in the United States in and around that year and shortly after, and there's an awful lot of ties with the creation of that particular Masonic lodge and America's founding fathers and beyond. Maybe not the exact founding fathers, but people that were already, shall we say, deep state?
Yes.
Dare I say it?
Well, the elite people, the people at the top of the pyramid, if you'll excuse the pun.
No, that's actually accurate here. That's how they frame themselves. Yeah, that...
yeah, the people at the top of the pyramid, they love their little secret. A lot of it is, as James Murray in the chat pointed out, a lot of it's really boring, a lot of it's really stupid and juvenile. Oh, lot of it is people sitting around with funny handshakes, doing funny handshake things. And then basically kind of sniffing their farts and thinking how clever they are. But some of it does have an influence. And I think it's not quite as grand as a lot of people would like to make out. And again, a lot of this they've attempted to discredit through saying, Illuminati, you know, all these crazy tinfoil conspiracy people. It's like, the truth is more mundane, yes, but the truth is still the truth, that they still existed. And their iconography, you know, is still there. They are one of the more famous, and I think one of the more overused of these secret societies, but we'll come to later, are ones that very much do influence our everyday life today, in one way or another. The members of it at least do. But yeah, they hold the template, and they held the level of power at the time that was hard to ignore, and it's hard to ignore the kind of the spread. I can't say proliferation today still. I actually said it there, but yeah, the spread of their iconography. And the way in which it is very much intertwined with America's founding myth.
Yeah, I mean, even his some quotes that Adam Weishaupt is quoted as saying. Let's see if I can find them. Are actually kind of what you would suggest sort of ring true for American independence kind of thinking. It is a man who is ruled by a government, is not a man, he is just sort of, I'll find it exactly, but he was anti-government, very very pro information and knowledge, and sort of basically acclaimed that anyone whose main goal was the truth and knowledge was a member of the Illuminati. But it was a secret club with weird little practices. That secret little club, if you look up the Wikipedia page, it's hilarious. Yeah, it's just basically, this existed briefly and then was disbanded.
And then
nothing was ever heard of it ever again.
Ever again. I would argue that the whole Illuminati thing is good because it shows a mindset rather than a overarching organization that has, mm-hmm. you know, overwhelming control and continuity to this day. It doesn't. I don't think it has full continuity, and it certainly doesn't have overwhelming control because of that. It is an example of something that exists today.
It is.
And it is a useful example because a lot of people use it as like the tantamount secret society, secret club, New World Order, the conspiracy theory. Yeah. When it's kind of the opposite when you look at it. It is more benign, but it is also, you know, more true. It's not as overarching, but it is definitely and was definitely real.
I don't know, because yes, it was definitely real. Whether or not it exists today as some sort of secret echelon above the other secret societies that tend to borrow from its iconography, and it's not the iconography, but it's the sort of mindset of it. It's the truth above all, and you know, man should rule himself, etc. They all have these sort of very similar secret sort of tenets that they're working towards. And let's have a group of people that are ha 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 fart smellers. Yes, we're more intelligent than everybody else. And therefore we get the right to rule the world, and we will work together to accomplish that. And they built big cabals of industry and banking. I mean, it is there right on the $1 bill. The Federal Reserve was part of the Illuminati, if only briefly, and never thought to change its iconography afterwards if it left. So we are talking about really fucking powerful organizations. You know, the Federal Reserve, that privately owned organization that lends money to allow America to function. Remember, privately owned, not owned by the people. So, yeah. I don't know if it doesn't exist, man. I'm way further down the rabbit hole. I'm far more. What is it, Mulder, on this one? I am willing to believe a lot more, just through holy shit, it's all fucking there staring me in the face. I can't fucking ignore it anymore. They're either taking the piss. Now, this is the other option. And it's quite likely that this is the other option, is that secret societies use Illuminati iconography to fuck with people like me.
Oh, of course, yeah. They do it because it's a form of, like, camouflage, almost.
Yeah.
They do it to make themselves look like, you know, anyone calling them out would be a ridiculous conspiracy theorist.
Yeah.
It's like the Pepe thing. It's like the OK symbol. It's like if a group of actual white nationalists did clothe themselves in Pepe's and OK symbols, people will get laughed out of the building for calling them white nationalists because, you know, the wolf has been cried too much. And yes. It's a good example. It's a good example of how, you know, true facts get discredited because of the wolf crying and also because of deliberate misinformation. But yeah, the Illuminati is a good basis here, but we should... There's two organizations I want to talk about because they are kind of intertwined with that very formative period where people get... We talked about the tap on the shoulder. We talked about the intelligence agencies recruiting from elite universities to, you know, keep people within the establishment and, you know, pick people from the existing establishment, the children of the establishment, to both, you know, gain influence and maintain influence. But the other side of that are the secret societies that existed at both the elite universities in the US and the UK. Because I put them both on the intro slide there, one of which being Skull and Bones, and the other of which, actually more relevant, we talked about during the Boris Betrayal episode, is the Bullingdon Club.
Should we start with that one?
We can start with the Bullingdon Club, yeah, if you want to get up the either the image or the story. That's an ITV News story here, which is interesting.
This is I literally just clicked on that as you said it, so I have it right here.
Oh, there we go.
It's a dodgy lineup of... Yeah, that's our elite today, that is.
It is. It literally is. There's the reason that this image got so much traction is because in the same year, in the same club, is it Oxford or Cambridge, the Bullingdon Club? I can never fucking remember.
It's both. Both can... I think both can go there. Yeah. I think this might be the Oxford wing of it, but I believe Bullingdon Club operates in both. But I might be wrong. This is the clubs that I was never let near. I had some of the same education as these guys. I didn't go to the same university.
Some of us went to skate schools. No, I didn't go to skate school. I don't skate or die, you know. I'm not on the half pipe. State schools, good lord.
Yeah, but no, I didn't. And I played rugby with not this particular lot, but yeah, these types of people.
Oxford, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it is Oxford, but I think Bullingdon Club is Oxford, yeah. Although they're having similar clubs at both of these places. The Bullingdon Club is just the most famous example. I think it is now defunct, but there is other clubs in its place, or another club in its place. There will always be, I think, at these elite universities, an equivalent of the Bullingdon Club. It's a boys-only, what do they call it, a dining society.
Yes. It would be a dining society, and they would go out dressed like that in, you know, very early 19th century, sort of 1920s, 1930s, sort of art deco, top hat and tails type sort of attire. And they would, you know, throw money at homeless people and, you know, at the floor, you know, generally act like complete assholes. It wouldn't surprise me to find a trail of dead coked up hookers behind this lot, but no stories like that have yet emerged. But it wouldn't surprise me. It was that. But yeah, they were a club of lads. They would go out and drink, and they were very tight, very tight. And there was, you know.
Well, if you scroll down here, it's got identifying numbers here.
Yes.
What you'll see is that this image actually contains Boris Johnson and David Cameron. A former and current prime minister, who were both, you know, it shows how incestuous that the top strata of elite society is, that two people who went to Oxford in the same year and were part of the same small elite club, two of them became prime minister from that small little segment of the population, from that tiny, tiny club. You know, in that small section of people who go to Oxford, you know, in the small section of people who end up as politicians, two people in the same photo, in this same elite club, managed to become prime minister.
Yep.
And I think that's a real indicator of how rigged the system is. It's this lie that we tell people.
It's not just prime minister. There's also a Sir Ewan Ferguson, who was the British prime minister, ambassador to South Africa and France.
Yes.
There is the first son of a hereditary peer, which means given enough time, he'll end up sitting in the House of Lords, whether he, you know, does nothing with his life or not. That would have happened to him at some point. You know, 700 quid a day for sitting in a room full of urine smelling old farts. I mean, that sounds detestable, but 700 quid a day, you know.
not too bad. 700 quid a day, yeah.
You might do it once or twice a week, just and hold your nose. So there's it. That's just 1 year. You've got. And we're not just talking four VIPs out of them. Every single one of them is a, apart from one or two, is, you know, a TV producer or
yeah,
something
a
like that.
Yeah, a very high-up investment banker.
There's a very interesting one here. One of them is an unidentified member who has never been publicly named or identified. I'm not even going to mention the number.
The man was in the Bullingdon Club at Oxford. Someone was, oh yes, that was, I remember, Charlie, good lad.
No.
Chundered everywhere.
No,
no, it's,
no. Charlie, no, Fred, no, Bill, whoever it is, is never been identified. So there you go. And I tell you what, he won't be just some fucking dude in a van. He won't be a dude in a van type of glowy. He'll be fucking dude in top office at Whitehall glowy. Or King glowy,
yes.
Or in other countries somewhere, you know, in very, very nice. You don't know. There's your actual potential James Bond character, I'm just saying. Because there are operatives that do that sort of shit, you know, that do the really high-flying embassy, you know, type of stuff. There's your character.
Wisp. Glowy, we can actually bring back up the federal incandescence scale here.
Oh.
Actually, no, I think by this... Oh, Triggers... Oh, what was that noise, Trigg? Is the scale broken? Have we broken... Has all of this broken the scale, Trigg?
It's hanging in there. Oh, we will see at the moment, but we are right at the bottom. But
yeah, it's Glowy is a reference to the late great Terry A. Davis, developer of Temple OS, and he referred to the CIA as glow in the dark CIA N-words, and he said that he ran one down with his car in 1993. The internet parlance of glowy came out to refer to federal agents specifically. I'm afraid we've broken the scale, folks.
Yep.
I'm afraid the federal incandescent scale, all of this tinfoil, all of these conspiracy theories, and all of these federati have unfortunately broken the fedometer.
We need to recalibrate it or something, and make it a little more robust for the future, but
yeah, that's what glowy refers to. If you hear us talk about, there's a lot of inside baseball internet terms here. I'm familiar with that that a lot of quote-unquote normies might not be familiar with, if I may use that parlance. But yes, that's what a glowy is.
We'll get them up to speed eventually. Yeah, no, they yeah, that there may be someone there that's an interesting character now somewhere, or ceased to exist.
Yeah, someone who was disappeared and scrubbed from the record, Stalin style. That is also equally possible.
Well, if they were a glowy and then did something and something bad happened, yeah. I really don't think the British government and glories are at the Stalin-esque scale of, you know, of literally removing people from pictures. But it's possible. You know, I if your imagination can picture it, it's possible. If it's as long as it's within the bounds of physics. I mean, you know, I do appreciate some people go off onto some very wild fantasies, but if it's actually, you know, a
we're not talking about, like, you know, mutant secret lizard people in moon bases here. There's a reason that we say these are very grounded things, and these are things we have a lot of evidence for. But the reason I wanted to include the Bullion Club was because there's a lot of pushback right now against the idea that there is a small group of global, you know, national, then going into global elites that will always be in power no matter what you do, and, you know, are trying to bend countries and international organizations and the world to their will. And things like the Bullion Club and what we'll come to later with Skull and Bones and the existence previously of the Illuminati, yes, they did exist. I know it's kind of sounds silly talking about them, but yes, they did exist. Mm-hmm. It really adds credence to that, that in order to become a power broker, someone in the limelight or even someone in the shadows, you have to be part of these clubs. And we talked about it previously. These clubs, like Skull and Bones, like Bullingdon Club, we'll come to Skull and Bones later, they keep information on each other. And the reason that they exist is a lot of it is hazing, like was mentioned earlier. Well, they have a lot of hazing rituals.
Should we go into the at least one of the hazing rituals that we are aware of?
We'll go into that in more detail, because that was mentioned character in passing on the last screen. But do you want to get that up? There was lots of stories about it at the time.
Do we have a story available on the link? You know what, I'll find one. But we... Well, I'll start by asking people the quote, the question, and you the question. Have you ever seen the episode of Black Mirror? The first episode of Black Mirror, by any chance?
Yes. The thing is, I've seen it, because it's one of the only good ones.
Now, the premise in that is that the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom is blackmailed into, well, to put it bluntly, buggering a pig. And I don't mean going out and getting really, really lathered and picking up some lass that's a bit on the heavy side. I mean, on camera, actually had sex with an actual pig. Now, the reason that was so fucking hilarious is that that came out at the same time that a certain story about David Cameron, our ex...
At the time, current Prime Minister. I will say he was at the time in power. This was whilst he was a sitting Prime Minister, by the way.
You know what? Here we go. David Cameron, secret society, and a pig's head.
Yep.
Explained. I'm gonna use another Guardian article, because bless them, they've got all this sorts of crap in droves.
Well, the thing is, we like using sources from obscure places, from right wing places, left wing places. You know, NPR, BBC, Breitbart. You know, Real Clear. All of that. We like using all of them because they're all useful to create a picture. It's all useful as well to show that we are not just coming at this from an angle of complete political bias, that you know, we are able to demonstrate the existence of what we're saying from multiple angles.
I love that picture. That's like the ultimate medieval milady going off right there.
It is, yeah.
Now, this is actually the Gaveston Society. Which is completely different from the Bullingdon Club, in that it's another society that is behind closed doors in Oxford, and
it's essentially part of it.
It's the same freaking thing. It's the same people going to the same. It's just like they'll have the Bullingdon on Mondays, and they'll have the Gaveston on Thursdays, and they'll have the, I don't know, hooker shagging on Wednesdays, and then we'll do a bit of work.
Like I said, these organizations still exist just by other names. Because the Bullingdon Club became so famous and their antics became so disliked that they basically had to change the name of it. But yeah, an unofficial biography by one of his former actual schoolmates, I think. It was someone who was at Oxford at the time. So it's kind of a wink and a nod by the people there telling him not to step out of line. Yeah, it's very much a I know what you did kind of thing.
They even have an bit on that in this article of what's the difference between Piers Gaveston and the Bullingdon Club, and it says, oh, it's the other drinking society that David Cameron was known to be a member
of. Yeah, they're old Etonians. They all went to Eton. So really, from the time you go to primary school, your path to power is set. You have to go to Eton.
Boris was also a member of this one as well. I mean, these two were. And same uniform, tailcoats, waistcoats, bow ties, etc. And shall we get down to it? Shall we tell them what David did to be able to join this place? He fucked a pig's head. He used a severed pig's head as a fleshlight. That's what these people do in these places as a hazing ritual. So don't expect it to be better over America either. Skull and Bones, there's some really fucking wild shit. The thing is, can I say what they did in Skull and Bones and it not be liable because I can't actually physically back it up with documented evidence?
I love that the Bullingdon Club is still banned from meeting within a 15-mile radius of Christchurch after members smashed 400 windows at the college in 1927.
Here's the annoying thing. If I'd gotten into Oxford Academy, I'd have so joined that club. They sound like they had a right old fucking laugh. Some of it is great fun. You know, get pissed up, run around, and smash windows. It's football hooliganism.
Yeah, but that's the thing is, though, that this is the shit that they use to get you in later life.
Yes.
Once you are an influential person because you are on that path, mm-hmm. This was 1927. This is still being discussed in, you know, we're here in Year of Our Lord, current year plus five, 2020. The year that will either make or break, I think, the rest of the next decade, but we'll see.
You know that line there that it says there? It was basically about getting drunk and standing on restaurant tables shouting fucking plebs at people. I've seen that with my own eyes. I'll even own up to actually partaking in that sort of behaviour. You know, that's your private school. That's your boarding school mentality right there. It's a little bit nasty. It's a little bit my dad, you know,
my dad could buy your dad, yeah.
Yeah, my dad could buy your dad. Your dad works for my dad type of attitude. And they like it as teenagers. They like it as 20-somethings. And they like it as politicians when they run your country and they say nice things to you. And then when behind closed doors, they're still fucking plebs. That's the thing.
Like I said, it's mutually assured destruction. It's a lot of this. This is honestly the harmless stuff. I know it's the stuff that The Guardian likes to rile up the class war stuff with, but if it went only that far, it'd be, you know, still shitty, but it wouldn't be what we're talking about. It is the fact that they use these secret societies, these dining clubs, these clubs of elite people to control the world, or control the country. Like, it's not a conspiracy theory to say that. You can come out and say it. You can say that because of what some people did in the Bullingdon Club, they are bought and paid for in the rest of their career. Mm. And they will constantly be reminded of the dirt that these people have on them. And if there is an agenda that the rest of these elite people in a country or on a global scale want to enforce, they will use this to make that person fall back into line. That is just a fact. And that is something that you really have to wrestle with and deal with and inform people of, really, that it's not just the fact that these people are toffs. It's not the fact that these people are quote-unquote right-wing or evil. Or a lot of it is more insidious than that. It's not just an ideology. It's not just a way of thinking. It is a set of rules. It is an unspoken, shall we say, gentleman's agreement, which we will come to next here. Because I think before we talk about Skull and Bones, we should have a bit of a... shall we say a bit of a venture into the Grove? Because there's another famous secret society.
Oh. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Tell you what. Just roll the clip. We'll roll the clip, then we'll talk about it. You've probably seen this clip before, but yeah. roll the clip there, Jake.
Obviously, I'll cue it up. There you go.
In the
Jamie's
fall
queued
of 2004, while in New York to cover the Republican National Convention, we ran into David Gergen, the Karl Rove of four presidential administrations.
Okay, one last question. I read a Washington Times article many years ago where you had a comment about the organization, and then now it's been in the Wall Street Journal, it's been in a lot of different newspapers, and that's the Bohemian Grove. And back in, what was it, 1996, when you joined as a Clinton advisor, the Republicans were criticizing you. Oh, what about Bohemian Grove? And then you countered them, by saying, "Hey, I don't run around in the woods naked." What did that mean?
Here is the before mentioned Washington Times article where he said, "I didn't run around naked like they do."
I love his face. He knows he's fucking got him.
I don't know what quote you're referring to. I'm not aware of any quote like that. I am a happy member of the Bohemian Grove. I like the folks who come there, and it's really inappropriate for me to talk about the group beyond that. Thank you.
Have you been there for the ceremony with the Commission of Care?
Frankly, I don't think that's something I need to talk to you about.
Really?
That's right.
Well, I'm Alex Jones, and I snuck in there in 2000. I'm the guy that blew it wide open
and got the video, and it's been on national TV.
Well, I disrespect you for that.
You do?
I do.
But it's a lot of big public officials going in there. Don't we deserve to know?
You took an I don't know anything about you, and I don't know anything about your film. But if you go in there with an understanding, you violated that understanding by releasing that film, and I don't respect you for that.
Really? But you, we have public officials.
I'm sorry. You took an understanding when you went in there that you would not do that film. And you did you have an understanding when you went in there?
No.
Did you crash it?
Yes.
Yeah, and it has no trespassing signs there, too, doesn't it?
No, they put them up after.
I'm sorry, sir. I've been there before. I know what the circumstances are, and I'm sorry you violated the understandings. That was not a gentlemanly thing to do.
But what about the ritual? Is the ritual gentlemanly?
Sir, everything. I don't owe you this comment.
I know.
You have. This is what's called ambush journalism, and I disrespect you for that as well. So thank you,
you ever
and goodbye.
Been in the ritual?
That's none of your damn business.
Oh.
Listen. You go around and make understandings with people and violate them. You ambush people on the streets, and that's an inappropriate form of journalism. If you wish to practice that, that's fine. But don't ask others to respect you for it. If you want to, you can do it. You're free American like anything you want. If you want to be uncivil and rude and ungentlemanly, that's up to you. But don't expect the rest of us to say, "Oh, well, you're
there, Mr. Gergen."
I'm sorry, nobody sets policy in there. We try to be gentlemen, and obviously, you don't belong there.
Weaving spiders come out here.
Yeah, that is a three-pointer. Woo!
Look how strangely he behaved when we brought it up. Why is he acting so secretive? And why did he get so angry when he discovered that we'd snuck in? You see, they take it very, very seriously. This is one of the hallmarks of the occult and secret
society.
God,
it's funny. It's funny just because anyone who thinks the Bohemian Grove isn't real, anyone who thinks that it's a quote-unquote, you know, another one of these conspiracy theories, anyone who thinks that at all gets completely just blown out by that video of him just coming out and saying it himself.
You've got Business Insider picture here.
Yeah.
Business Insider. Ronald Reagan on one side, Richard Nixon on the other side.
Nixon only went there like that. I think that was the only time Nixon went there.
he had some comments.
What did he say,
Trump? It was something like it was the most homosexual thing he'd ever seen.
He said it was the faggiest thing he'd ever seen.
The faggiest goddamn thing
I've ever seen is the Bohemian Club.
Yeah. It was a lot of nakedness and a lot of stuff that people get up to when they're, you know, drinking and naked. I don't know. I'm sure it was all very wholesome and healthy.
Well, if you notice here, this isn't just some nobody either. This isn't just some absolute nobody that they ambushed on the street. This guy, the guy that he talked to there, was a policy advisor to, I think, the Reagan administration, the Carter administration, and the Clinton administration. He was a top advisor to three administrations. And yet he's part of a secret society that is known for burning the effigy of a child in front of an owl god. And multiple reports of the fact that they use homosexuality to blackmail each other. And yet it's I would advise watching the later appearance, you know, the newest one of Alex Jones on Joe Rogan. He goes into it a bit more about the, you know, buggering each other and, you know, get fucked in the ass by a former president. And
That's more Skull and Bones than Bohemian Grove.
No, that's the Grove too. It's both of them.
Yeah. That's definitely a hazing ritual. Well, not definitely. So I hear, apparently, allegedly, through lots of rumor, etc. Please don't kill me.
the big thing I want to talk about is his reaction to that is very interesting because he got very offended. And a lot of these people, Bullingdon Club, we'll talk about Skull and Bones in a minute. That'll probably be the last one we talk about before we move on to the more of the random conspiracy theories and we do a bit of a roundup. The way that he talks about it is that he is offended because it's all based on this idea that you made a gentleman's agreement. And stepping out of line, revealing these things without the group voting to reveal them first, is a violation of this gentleman's agreement. And that is the worst thing you can do in the upper echelons, is violate the etiquette. It is all about enforcement via etiquette as well. That's the way that they do it, and that's the way that they think about it. You'll see that he's not angry at the fact that Alex Jones knows about this. He's angry at the fact that he's not playing by the same funny handshake rules. And that's why I think, especially in the 1970s and 80s, why a lot of people got very upset with the Freemasons, even though they're a lot more toothless than a lot of these other societies are, because it started to invade the public sectors. It started to invade things like the police, like the health service, like the civil service. And you couldn't progress past a certain level, no matter what your merit was, without being a Freemason. This is well documented.
I hear it's still very much the case in the police. You're supposed to say that you're a Freemason and have to be able to openly admit it if you're in the police. It doesn't stop, certainly some rumours I've heard that at least, you know, sort of three or four people above the person or people I know are all Freemasons within the police. It's still very prevalent.
It's seen as a good career move.
It's certainly a good career move. It boils down to, it's a good career move because, much like a lot of these things like Round Table and a lot of these small Masonic clubs, you get to meet other people that have got a decent business or what have you, or well employed, that all get together and do this thing on a Thursday night or whatever. And it's, you know, good social networking building. That's at the low level. That's how how people get into these things. Further up, it's a huge army of people at their disposal, and if you can just sway what they do just a little bit over hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people, you can make a massive impact. So that, you know, it's a good idea that you guys promote this thing and look after these particular charities this year. Comes down from the top.
Yeah, it is. It just becomes, a lot of it isn't as well, it's insidious because it's not just a push, it's also like a nudge. It's the soft power of being able to lead a larger amount of people in a certain direction, especially when those people are like a tier down of influence. And they've got people who are prime ministers and presidents and, you know, ambassadors, but you've also got people who are, you know, police, kind of like police commanders, or they are, you know, higher up civil servants. Although there are even people who are like, you know, heads of medium-sized businesses. Yeah. And they all move in one direction. It pulls a lot of people with them.
Oh, massive amounts. All of the employees, all of the people under them. All, you know, if it's amazing how much influence, you know, maybe just 10 active, well-positioned people in a community can do. You know, 10 well-positioned people in a city. If they are police commissioners, if they're local mass employers, and the like, you know, local artist or local head of TV station, suddenly you'll have that whole city very, very rapidly singing the same tune. If, of course, there aren't anybody else acting to counter that.
Yeah.
Which, of course, there will be.
There will, but like I said, it's organized versus disorganized a lot of the time. It's grassroots versus top end.
Yes.
And that can be hard to fight, especially in systems where, you know, the trust in public officials is more than gently encouraged.
Oh, yeah. Let's all get out and clap for the state. I mean, the NHS.
The Bohemian Grove is really the top-end example of yes. all of these. Again, not a conspiracy theory. You can see this is real. The press talks about it. People talk about it. And the feeling that what is done there needs to be secret, and that if you go against, you know, the gentleman's agreement, you are committing a unforgivable sin, is one of the more revealing things. It's not just about the practice. It doesn't matter if they talk about policy there. If you saw someone at the Grove, they know what you did. And if you deal with them on the outside world, you know, they are both your brother, and they are somebody who knows things about you.
I'll tell you what, I've got a Vanity Fair article up at the moment. For a start, bless them. They've got a really nice picture there that's really captured the image nicely. You've got a bunch of people circa 1940s in drag. You've got the cremation of care. You've got the Moloch and the owl. It's a nice little splash screen whilst talking about it. But later on, down in the bottom of the article, I just noticed, you've got a list of people that... prior members and people who have gone. And this list includes Christopher Buckley, William Buckley, George W. Bush, George H.W. Bush, Dick Cheney, Kelvin Coolidge, Walter Cronkite, Bing Crosby, Henry DuPont, Clint Eastwood, Dwight D. Eisenhower, Gerald Ford, Barry Goldwater. Just the list goes on and on and on. Ronald Reagan is the bottom. David and Nelson Rockefeller, Theodore Roosevelt. It's Henry Kissinger. It's everybody. Yeah, Barry Goldwater. God, even him. Oh well.
A lot of people only went there once or twice, and a lot of people did not like what they said. So, yeah. Like Nixon.
Yeah.
Nixon was not an active member of the Grove.
Yeah, they get everyone to go once.
Yeah.
And that's, I would imagine a lot of these names that have been slapped up there, the ones that are surprising are probably the ones that have been, look, he went.
Double Bush. We got both Bushes. That's surprising.
Both Bushes and Dick Cheney. I bet Dick Cheney was a regular, you know.
Yeah, I bet Dick Cheney went, yeah. Oh, dear. You'll notice it's a lot of neo-libs and neocons as well.
It's
a lot of the people who have been both unpopular and somehow in power. it's that dynamic here.
Charlton Heston and Herbert Hoover. I bet Charlton Heston hated it.
It's funny because there's a lot of overlap here with Skull and Bones.
But it also highlights the old, you know, new boot thing we were talking about the other day. Don't matter which side of the fence you're on. You know, there's Democrats and Republicans alike, just as in the Bullingdon clubs and those types of clubs. There's Labour and Conservative alike.
There is this myth peddled by the left that the Bohemian Grove is a group of right-wingers that meet up, which is hilarious considering what they get up to. It is not a group of right-wingers. Neither is the Bullingdon Club, neither is Skull and Bones. It is not about party politics. Anyone who is an elite from either side of the political aisle is expected to go at least once. I honestly think the Bohemian Grove fell out of favor slightly in the later years. It seems that Epstein's Island became the new Grove. It was the place that everyone had to go to. No.
Yeah,
everyone basically was badgered into going there at least once.
No, you're
like, you would be
right.
Axed by your entire social circle sometimes. Oh, you really must, you know, you really must come to this gathering of people we're having. Oh, you really must come to this thing we're having. Oh, you really must come. It really is that. And then you get there and you're like, oh dear.
Oh, dear.
Something really happened there.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Shall we get on to the Skull and Bones? But yes,
we'll get on to Skull and Bones because we've got to talk about another topic after this as well. We've got one more of the conspiracies to tackle because again, it's something that you talked about being a conspiracy until it wasn't. It's very similar to the MKUltra stuff. It's a good bookend. But yeah, we'll get into Skull and Bones as our last secret society to cover here.
So,
although I will say that our last topic kind of is in that realm. I don't know if we consider it a secret society or not, but. Anyway, sorry, go on, Jake.
I was just going to say, the Skull and Bones is—it's another fraternal order. It's your university frat boy kind of fraternity, at least at the front end, like the Bullingdon clubs, etc. But then you sort of start looking through it's who's a member and what they get up to, and it's exactly the same story, but in America. And you think the Bullingdon Club's, you know, powerful members. Oh God, this page is.
We had to archive it because the Lions page, it had paywall issues, and I use extra coding to get around that generally. Mm. But yeah, if you scroll down a lot further, it should start the list properly.
It does. Yeah, no, I was just checking off screen
because it's very bad. It's very bad.
We have. William Howard Taft, not someone I know a huge amount about personally, but was apparently a president and Supreme Court justice.
Yeah, Taft was a president, and Taft administration. Yeah.
So you know,
his father founded it.
Yeah,
like it said.
I can't say that I. Interesting. He was given the honorary title of Magog. Meaning he had the most sexual experience whilst in the secret club, according to Alexandra Robbins.
Huh. Wasn't Taft famously quite fat in later life?
I think he might have been. I don't know a huge amount about Taft. Walter Camp.
Hawk Magog. They make fun of it in The Simpsons a bit, Skull and Bones, quite famously.
Oh yeah.
Walter Camp, yep, he was. Wait, who was Walter Camp? I'm not actually familiar with Walter.
He was the father of American football.
Oh right, that's why. Because no one fucking plays it outside of America.
This was the fuck that took rugby and mutilated it into that abortion of a game that the Yanks play. Okay, let's move on from him. He doesn't deserve any more time.
I'd agree with that.
Fuck that guy. Astrophysicist Spitzer, this guy, Lyman Spitzer, dreamed up the idea of the Hubble Space Telescope. Nicely done. Powerful guy.
Yeah. Again, it's the upper echelon of all fields, though.
Yeah. Potter Stewart. This guy was Yale Law Review, Supreme Court Justice. You're saying that the legal field starts to get stacked by one group of people that all know each other. This guy was one of JFK.
The thing is, they all know each other's secrets as well.
Yeah.
Through the hazing culture. It's very much, it's kind of like the Bullingdon Club meets the Bohemian Grove, Skull and Bones. It's a bit more secret society, funny handshakes, weird words, shit.
Now we get to it, because this is where you can start pointing Skull and Bones at being, well, let's say if I was someone that really wanted to have a look at the Skull and Bones and go through all of their members and link them all up and spend hours doing so.
I'm going to say, I thought it was a later life thing was his hairline, but Bush Sr. always had a ridiculous forehead. Jesus Christ.
He has, yes, somewhat of a, is it Widow's Peak they call it? But no, the Skull and Bones, look through it. There's an awful lot of people going to intelligence services like CIA from these people or lower echelon. These are just the most influential people on the list. It takes
obviously that's Bush Senior. Wasn't he accused of? Or was it his father who was accused of stealing Geronimo's skull?
Geronimo's skull. You say?
Yes.
Where was that? I've got that here. Mystery of Geronimo's skull. That,
Because that's quite one. That's one of the Bullying. That's the Bullying Club. Sorry, one of Skull and Bones' most famous kind of hazing incidents or pranks.
Yes.
It's a bit more lighthearted. It's a bit more fun. A lot of it is a bit more nefarious.
You know, if I was joining one or the other, I'll take that over fucking a pig's head.
Yeah.
I mean, I've made some mistakes whilst drunk before, but never that far. Mystery of Geronimo's missing skull. Yeah, okay, so Skull of Apache Warrior. We all know who Geronimo is, or roughly. As the story goes, 9 years after Geronimo's Skull and Bones members who were stationed at the army outpost dug up the warrior's grave and stole his skull, as well as some bones. They sprinted with the remains to New Haven. To make matters more intriguing, legend has it that the grave robbing posse included Prescott Bush, father of George H.W. Bush, and grandfather of George W. So yeah, they've got a fair old history in the Skull and Bones. And apparently that skull is stashed at their sorority, or society rather, clubhouse.
Sorority. Most bourbon sororities with some of the lack of testosterone there. There's some big foreheads and weak chins.
Yeah. Sorry, I was going down the frat boy / sorority house thing in my head, and for some reason I stuck at sorority houses.
Of course. Yeah, also, we should mention Jeb as well.
Interesting. If you're looking at these types of rituals, sorority rituals, much more interesting to watch.
A lot more drama.
Yes. Sorry, I totally sidetracked myself and everything.
But yeah, that's Skull and Bones, the US equivalent of the Bullingdon Club. And we could say the Bullingdon Club is the UK equivalent of the Skull and Bones, because I imagine we may have a few more US viewers at some point. There are more of you.
Yeah, but you know what? I would argue the first one is likely to be the ones that are done in England, because that club thing has been going off in Oxford and Cambridge and longer, you know, or various names for a hell of a long time, probably pre-1776. As we mentioned, America does seem to be fond of picking up secret organisations even in its early days. Bullingdon Club, I don't know if it goes back that far, but yeah. Either way, they're each other's equivalents.
Bullingdon Club is early 1800s, I think.
Yeah, okay. So they're likely to be equivalents and so whatever. Whoever came first, chicken and egg, don't really care. They're both a bunch of prats drinking heavily and doing weird shit in a clubhouse, and then using the weird shit that they did as bribery on each other, or at least security on each other, whilst they take over the world. You work out whether that's a good thing or bad thing. I've spent half my life panicking about it, to be honest, but I don't think much can be done other than making people aware. I mean, if you could go, okay, you know what? We're going to ban these universities from anyone that's been there. You don't get to be in politics anymore. You don't represent the people. You can go into business, do your business shit privately, fine, but not politics. Maybe that would help.
Maybe, I don't know. They just find a way around it. They'd rename it. They'd be in another club.
They'd spring up in other universities. They'd soon. Yeah, I was going to say it's very difficult to know how to deal with it.
I think the only real way to deal with it is I don't know. It's arboreal hydration again. But I don't know, man. I kind of want to make arboreal hydration society patches, but I also want to make wood chipper technician patches too.
I think both. You know, there's a reason. Where is the arboreal?
It's buried. So it's one of our stock images there.
The thing is, I've got it named wrong. I've got it named Tree of Liberty, and
we're not saying that. But we're gonna
but yeah, no, I say do it.
Yeah, this is our secret. It's not secret, but anyone can join. It's fine. There's some prerequisites though. I wouldn't exactly call it hazing, but you'll see. Good dear me. Right, Trig, shall we quickly, before it gets too long in the tooth, move on to our final topic here? Because this one,
you know what we've got. Yes. What are we doing here?
It's the this one comes with a bit of explanation for this for this image, because it comes with a bit of a funny story about a friend of mine. But we do have one final thing to talk about here.
All right.
Before we go into, we'll skim over some general ones because this is getting to be a relatively long stream.
It is. Hold on a second. I've lost my links here.
Yeah, I want to keep this VOD watchable for you guys. I like to keep it like, it's not a super hard rule, but I like to keep them under 2 hours. Kind of an hour and a half to 2 hours is generally what we do. I'll remind people at the end as well, because I don't know why at the end, but there will be a stream tomorrow too. The firearm stream we talked about last week, we will be going ahead and we will be doing it. We'll be doing some World of Guns and some general shit talking, and we'll hopefully be joined by our good friend Doc, who we can go on many tangents with, because that's the point of our. I guess I'm settling, or we're settling into a pattern here of a more structured Thursday stream and a more free-form Friday stream. Even though this one's a bit more shit-posty. We try and keep these fun, guys. There's too much kind of ripped from the headline stuff. I like to go on topics and that can be interesting, that can be a bit more meat too, a bit more fun too, like all this Secret Society stuff. Yeah, we have one final topic here,
which one are we doing again?
It's the Bilderberg Group.
Oh, the Bilderberg Group. Good God, of course, I'm fucking mental. sorry, I was going through it going, are we doing gay frogs? Oh, no, yeah, sorry.
No. I've got the Splashem is there with a joke on it, too.
Yeah.
A joke on it, ready to go.
You mean that joke? You mean that
joke? Yeah, that's
true. No, so it's all right. I was getting lots of teddy bears up on the screen, and it was like, it's not the Bilderberg Group. No, it's the Bilderberg Group.
Oh dear, yeah, global policy. Yeah, it's possibly one of the more insidious. It's not even a secret. It's become its own almost institution, the Bilderberg Group.
Here's the thing. It was a secret society, right?
Yeah.
If you were me back in the 90s and stumbled across this early days, internet really didn't exist, but sort of did. There was bulletin boards, etc. Rumors were going about the Bilderberg Group. You can find it. You found it on other. It was one of those rumored things that you had to had to dig a bit for, and. It was, I mean, me, I was so into the whole sort of, let's dig through Illuminati garbage wherever I can find it, because this is hilarious. And quite interesting as well, there's some very good books on the Illuminati. And Robert Anton Wilson wrote a very weird book called The Illuminatus Trilogy, and then Schrodinger's Cat Trilogy after it. And that was probably one of the weirdest sets of books I've ever read. But it sort of covers all of that stuff along with some Schrodinger's cat kind of theory type of way of writing it. Anyway, book review over. The Bilderbergs were one of those people that you talked about, and everyone went, "No, that's a conspiracy theory. That's utter drivel." No, all the most powerful people in the world aren't meeting to sort of dictate global policy over the next year, every year at secret, you know, locations. It sounded very much like the Illuminati to me, but apparently it was calling itself the Bilderberg Group at the time. And for at least 10 years, you're talking from the 90s where I first heard about it until easily the early 2000s. It was myth. It was shadow. It was you're talking nonsense. And then people like Luke Radowski, I think you were... We know who Luke Radowski is of We Are Change, friend of Tim Pool's. He's occasionally been on there.
Yes.
He was one of those guys that was chasing around. Another one, Alex Jones, talked about these people. Yeah. These crazy conspiracy theorists running around, chasing around, talking about secret organizations, et cetera, and that was all.
I should stress, like you were saying, that. Before the 1990s, this was not seen as something that existed, or at least if it was seen as existed, it was not seen as being a global policy meeting. It is a behind closed doors meme, kind of, you know. It's just people meeting in a social setting, you know. The thing is, all the most powerful people, politicians, it's all the heads of basically every major corporation in the world is at the Bilderberg Group. Everybody, who is everybody, is there. And these meetings take place in private. It's not public. It's not something that anyone can just get into. It's not something that's transparent.
It's not just
private.
It's not just big. Not just big bills. No. The thing is, there's two or three tiers to it. There are the operational ones, and they're difficult to find out who they are. Luke's done a lot of research into this, but there's basically, and then there's a guest list of regulars who use it as a kind of an annual club, shall we say. And then there's the other guests that are brought in once or twice. People that get brought in once or twice, how should we put it? Tony Blair was brought in the early 90s, a year before he became Prime Minister. Gordon Brown was brought in the year before he became Prime Minister. That type of behaviour happens. These people come in and they get an initiation. If you watch politicians going to the Bilderberg Group, certainly as it used to be, if you watch them, they appear in the Bilderberg Group list of guests, and then a year or two later, something really fucking big happens in their life. Usually very, very positive. Very positive. And
they have at least the perception of kingmakers.
Yeah. And for the longest time, you tell people about this, it's like, you're talking nonsense. I played the game, what was it? Deus Ex. Deus Ex was fucking wild for me because I was playing this game, and all the stuff that's in Deus Ex, if you go through the extended conversations, if you click the conversations until they say no more on just about everything and read the books, that game is wild with information that even if the names that they're using are different, they're pointing towards all of these same types of things. Love that game. I digress. The Bilderbergs in there. They mention them, and when the internet became live properly, when enough people started queuing up outside of the hotels that they were using to hold this, and estates that they're now using to hold this, they pretended like it had always been public. Oh yeah, here's our official website. This is what we do. We've been doing this since 1954, and we do this blah blah to informal discussions to foster dialogue between Europe, North Africa, America, every year. Approximately 130 political leaders, experts in industry, finance, labor, academia, and the media are all invited to take part in the meeting. Yeah. They only did this after being badgered and badgered and badgered by people. Up until then, conspiracy theories. You're retarded for even thinking it. You're mad. This wouldn't possibly happen. Now it's evil. Now they're just, oh yeah, we do this. And for almost... for complaining about it, you get called a conspiracy theorist to this day.
It's like, oh, you know, there may be a meeting of literally everyone of major influence in the world all coming together behind closed doors to have discussions you're not privy to. But don't worry, they're not doing anything untoward. it's ridiculous, especially with what's going on, especially with what happens. I mean, if things were okay, if people were free and governments weren't colluding together to rob people of their agency and their freedoms, as has been accelerating over the last year, if things were all hunky-dory, it would still be a bit eyebrow-raising. People are like, oh, okay, things seem okay. But because of the lockstep loss of liberty around the world, it becomes even more urgent that, like, well, where is all this coming from? How, you know, there seems to be a lot of, you know, it's like the Melia coincidence meme, not to get too far into that territory. But once you start recognizing all these coincidences, you can't stop recognizing all these coincidences until it really becomes not a coincidence anymore. You start to start seeing the underlying truth to it, which is that, you know, these meetings do have influence. This is where policy is set, and this is why all of these things are happening to us, seemingly out of nowhere and seemingly outside of our control.
The dullest, most boring corporate nonsense website. There's nothing. And yeah, this is the most important people in the world meeting every year. And where's the minutes? I'm just saying, is there any, can we, do we, as the rest of the world, get to hear what they say in there? Maybe have a quick listening, see if we're being sold to slave labor camps or worse. It's not just Europe and North America anymore.
No, it's not
just North,
it's,
Europe
it's,
and North
it's
America.
It's global,
anymore.
Yeah.
It's global, yeah.
Before I get too far into the weeds, I have a couple of donations here, and I will shamelessly link it in chat again. We will be reading all donations. You can donate via our Streamlabs link. We have a $2 donation here from Scrooge McDuck 33, saying, I seem to remember Obama was Skull and Bones. I'm not sure about that. I don't think Obama was.
No, Obama came out of another weird group.
Yeah.
What's the name of the organization? It shot out of my head. But Obama was groomed by communists and murderers.
He's in the list of 30 most powerful members. It was basically Obama's chief economist.
Yeah.
What was his name?
I can't remember the name of the organization at the moment.
Austin Goblsey, I think. And he was quite young at the time. He was a member of Skull and Bones. But Obama wasn't, but he was a member of another secret society. I can't remember what it was called, though.
I can dig it up if you like. But that's we're going off on a little bit of a tangent. I hadn't got that prepared. But yes. My mate Rogue is going to freaking kill me because we were talking about this just the other day about how Obama was basically a communist that had been put into place by...
We can cover it again. We can have a follow-up to this. There's too many things.
I can talk about this.
One of the topics I wanted to talk about, which kind of fell through the cracks because of the essential scrubbing of the internet, was I talked about the fixing of the election with JFK. The 1960 election, especially in Illinois, was extremely suspicious, and a lot of historians believe that that the election there was fixed for Kennedy.
Yes.
It is a matter of historical fact that Kennedy, in some of his earlier races, did get a large amount of mafia support, which may or may not have included electoral fraud. It's very contentious in today's climate, but it's getting to the point of being widely accepted. What else is there I want to cover? Because there's a few others you mentioned. There's the USS Liberty incident, which is kind of a meme.
It's a meme, but it was denied for the longest time until, records were found.
That's true, yeah. It's a good example of that. There's not a lot of meat to discuss there. For those of you who don't know, the USS Liberty was sunk by by the Israeli Air Force with quite a substantial loss of life. And there's indicators to the fact that they knew this was an American ship and they were giving warning this was an American ship and didn't seem to care. But USS Liberty incident is a meme. For a reason, but it is a meme.
But that one, like the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which never happened, were used as the pretense for further action internationally, shall we say. And the Gulf of Tonkin ended up with resulting in the Vietnam War happening. So these things do happen. They are used as pretense for... I mean, massive shit. I mean, you can even, we haven't queued it up, and actually it comes to me, it is a massive fucking one, was the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. At no point up until today has anybody, we've had plenty of time to stick fucking long sticks into as many sand dunes as we can find. Nowhere have we found weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. The entire pretext of the sort of Gulf War II, which essentially resulted in the death of Saddam. Death of Saddam Hussein, loss of control in Iraq, ISIS happens, all the shit that's happened over the last God knows fucking 15 years, is it now? Yeah, all because of Gulf War II, the pretext of which was weapons of mass destruction and he's hiding Osama bin Laden. And him bad, yeah. The whole pretext, the whole destabilization of the Middle East, yeah. No weapons of mass destruction found. Where was Osama bin Laden? Pakistan.
Yep, he was in Pakistan. One of our allies. Apparently.
But some of his friends were in Afghanistan, so don't remember we had to.
Oh yes,
we had to go and fucking jump into that hellhole.
Oh dear me. So, yeah, that's another one. What else have you got mentioned here? There is obviously the gay bomb.
The gay bomb's hilarious because whilst it is down as never being tested, there is rumors that it was tested.
San Francisco.
Unironically, yes, that's where people think it was actually tested.
Yeah.
The gay bomb was American military's. Basically, they thought, you know what? What would be a great way to defeat the enemy is to get the enemy to, when we charge over the foxholes and run at them, if the enemy is not ready to fight and is in fact engaged in mass sodomy of each other,
that will be easy to win, yes.
That we will be able to basically deal with them very rapidly once we take over. So they developed a series of weapons to be dropped from the air onto enemy positions that would really gay them up. And then the American military would be able to run over there. All those horny soldiers that haven't seen any action for a while will be able to run over at these newly gay enemy troops and deal with them in whatever way they see fit, I guess. Apparently, after spending large amounts of money on it, they decided not to do it, and it was a bad idea. And apparently, here, right, here's the thing. This article that was brought up, which was in 2005 by the BBC, apparently these plans were in 1994. The original plans were in the 1950s and 1960s, whilst they were fucking around with LSD.
MKUltra. It was part of that whole suite, yeah.
It was kind of part of that whole suite. There was another drug that they thought had potential that we've lately seen on the party scene, which is MDMA.
That was the one I wanted to mention. So yeah, MDMA, a lot of the 2C substances, a lot of the psychedelics that came out of the 60s, 70s and 80s, all of them have some kind of CIA link.
Mm-hmm.
Basically all of them. A lot of them were investigated by independent chemists later, but a lot of the original variants of them came out of this massive drive to find, influential, let's say, psychedelics that could put people in suggestive states.
Here we go.
Yeah, Jesus Christ mentions PCP. A lot of them. Crack cocaine was mentioned earlier. The crack epidemic and the CIA is something that's coming to light now, as it happened in the 1980s.
They did wild shit.
More of that.
They did wild shit to fucking soldiers in the Vietnam War.
Jacob's
Ladder is a pretty good film where I talk about that. There's been others since, but yeah, that's quite a brutal movie. Yeah, but combat drugs and drugs being used in warfare it's not new. It's not new. It's supposed to be banned, but it's only banned if they catch you. It's only. If you deny it and you don't have proof, no one can prove anything. And look at those terrible people over there. They've used chemical weapons. Let's invade Syria. Why would Syria do this?
Anyway, we'll round out our stream here. Someone mentioned it earlier. Coat Rack, thank you. It's not widely accepted, but it's starting to come more into the public consciousness. Our Lord and Savior, obviously, Building 7.
Indeed, our Lord and Savior. It's the new boot. What's the fucking?
it's a recurring character on our streams, and it is. We can't have a conspiracy stream without it.
Well,
but it's something that a lot of people talk about now. It is widely accepted with a lot of people, especially people who were around at the time and then looked it up later, that the collapse of Building 7 was announced before its actual collapse.
Yeah.
Pretty easily provable with the news reports at the time, with the time they were taken and what happened, and that is just—it's not mainstream yet. it's not, you know, people don't talk about it in the mainstream circles. But in terms of conspiracy theories, this is one of the most, I guess, mainstream conspiracy theories. We talked. It's funny watching Joe Rogan and basically all his guests just, oh yeah, Building 7, yeah. Oh, the building that collapsed, you know, without being hit by a plane. Oh yeah, the building that was announced collapsing before it collapsed. Yeah. It's, people don't really flinch as much anymore when you talk about Building 7. it's kind of, that's why we're bringing it as a meme here. But yeah, it's...
I mean, do we want to bring that back up? I think I can find the BBC.
We can link it. I can link it in chat.
Yeah. Let's do that, because that was very obvious. That's, you know, that's okay. It's 19 years ago now, but when you're watching it on the TV and you sat there going, "Hold on a second, that's Building 7 in the background there." What do you mean it's fallen, stupid woman?
Yeah.
And then 20 minutes later, or whatever it was, it falls. That means that they've been given a script and they've gotten the wrong script at the wrong time. You know, they're not reading the news as it's happening. Someone is someone knew that was going to happen 20 minutes before they went and pulled it. Now, the fact that it's rigged with explosives beforehand and came down in a controlled explosion and demolition, we can talk about that and whether or not you feel comfortable working in a government building in the future, knowing that can happen. You know, it, certainly it was rigged. If people want to deny that, I want to know how it fell down like that. So Building 7
was a fire. A fire started in it, guys. It was just a fire.
It was just a fire. A fire that resulted in everyone running out and then the whole thing collapsing in exactly the same manner as the other two ones that accidentally fell over because a plane hit them. Even though they were built to, you know...
Anyway. Shall we close this? We'll close this out with the clip. Thanks for coming to the stream, guys. Like I said, I'm going to double check if I've not heard any more donations, see if any more have come in before we close out. Actually, yes, I'm glad I checked. There's another one here from James Merry. Thank you, James. You've been very generous today. Why not chat about Syria, the chemical attacks, and the White Hats? Fun planking viral video, bro. Oh, God. We might have a talk about Syria and the White Hats and a lot of the fake stuff there at some point too. But like I said, this stream will be 10 hours long. You'll be tackled every single rabbit hole.
The thing is with those is those are unproven. Yeah, we've got evidence. We've got evidence to the contrary. And we're living in an age where making video recording is very, very easy.
Yes.
This one wanted to be here is the premise that people can say conspiracy theory about shit, and here's the proof that it when they say that, it ain't always true. In fact, more often than not, it's not true.
We'll leave you guys with the have you got it up there, Trade the News footage?
I haven't. I stopped looking for it when you said it. Hold on.
It'd be a fun outro.
Yeah. let's see if I can find it.
If we can get it up, if we can not drop the boomer ball here, we will leave you with a little outro of the BBC video, because you can clearly see Building 7 in the background as they're talking about its collapse in the past tense. It's kind of funny
because I'm not signed into YouTube. It keeps on wanting to play God knows how many adverts. Wants to prove it.
Okay, that's terrible.
It's, yeah,
at a high-rise experiment.
My phone contract comes with a YouTube premium account, so that's pretty cool. I don't like supporting Google, but that's a nice little bonus that I don't really have to directly support them with. If we can't get it to work, we can't.
I've not found it yet, so no, it's...
All right, I'll link it in the description then. But cool. Thanks, guys. Thanks for watching, and we'll talk to you guys again tomorrow. Tomorrow, tune in tomorrow, same time, 9 p.m. tomorrow, we'll have our gun autism stream. Indeed. So we'll see you then.
Take care.
Bye.